Ulysses, Disc 6.
Episode 6. Martin Cunningham first poked his silk-hatted head into the creaking carriage and, entering deftly, seated himself. Mr. Power stepped in after him, curving his height with care. "Come on, Simon." "After you," Mr. Bloom said. Mr. Dedalus covered himself quickly and got in, saying, "Yes, yes." "Are we all here now?" Martin Cunningham asked. "Come along, Bloom." Mr. Bloom entered and sat in the vacant place. He pulled the door to after him and slammed it twice till it shut tight. He passed an arm through the arm strap and looked seriously from the open carriage window at the lowered blinds of the avenue. One dragged aside, an old woman peeping, nose white flattened against the pane. Thanking her stars, she was passed over. Extraordinary the interest they take in a corpse. "Glad to see us go. We give them such trouble coming. Job seems to suit them. Hugger mugger in the corners. Slop about in slipper slappers for fear he'd wake. Then getting it ready. Laying it out. Molly and Mrs. Fleming making the bed. Pull it more to your side. Our winding sheet. Never know who will touch you, dead. Wash and shampoo. I believe they clip the nails and the hair. Keep a bit in an envelope. Grows all the same after. Unclean job." All waited. Nothing was said. Stowing in the wreaths, probably. "I am sitting on something hard. Ah, that soap. In my hip pocket. Better shift it out of that. Wait for an opportunity." All waited. Then wheels were heard from in front, turning. Then nearer. Then horses' hoofs. A jolt. Their carriage began to move, creaking and swaying. Other hoofs and creaking wheels started behind. The blinds of the avenue passed, and number 9 with its crape knocker, door ajar, at walking pace. They waited still, their knees jogging, till they had turned and were passing along the tram tracks. Tritonville Road. Quicker. The wheels rattled, rolling over the cobble causeway, and the crazy glasses shook, rattling in the door frames. "What way is he taking us?" Mr. Power asked through both windows. "Irish Town," Martin Cunningham said. "Ringsend, Brunswick Street." Mr. Dedalus nodded, looking out. "That's a fine old custom," he said. "I'm glad to see it has not died out." All watched a while through their windows, caps and hats lifted by passers. Respect. The carriage swerved from the tram track to the smoother road, past Watery Lane. Mr. Bloom, at gaze, saw a lithe young man, clad in mourning. A wide hat.
"There's a friend of yours gone by, Dedalus," he said.
"Who is that?"
"Your son and heir."
"Where is he?"
Mr. Dedalus said, stretching over across. The carriage, passing the open drains and mounds of ripped-up roadway before the tenement houses, lurched round the corner and, swerving back to the tram track, rolled on noisily with chattering wheels. Mr. Dedalus fell back, saying,
"Was that Mulligan cad with him? His fidus Achates?"
No, Mr. Bloom said. "He was alone."
"Down with his Aunt Sally, I suppose," Mr. Dedalus said. "The Goulding faction, the drunken little costdrawer and Chrissy, papa's little lump of dung, the wise child that knows her own father." Mr. Bloom smiled joylessly on Ringsend Road. Wallace Brothers, the Bottle Works, Dodder Bridge.
Richie Goulding and the Legal Bag. Goulding, Collis and Ward, he calls the firm. His jokes are getting a bit damp. Great card he was, waltzing in Stammer Street with Ignatius Gallagher on a Sunday morning. The landlady's two hats pinned on his head. Out on the rampage all night. Beginning to tell on him now. That backache of his, I fear. Wife ironing his back. Thinks he'll cure it with pills. All breadcrumbs they are. About 600% profit.
He's in with a low-down crowd, Mr. Dedalus snarled. That Mulligan is a contaminated, bloody, double-dyed ruffian by all accounts. His name stinks all over Dublin. But with the help of God and his blessed mother, I'll make it my business to write a letter one of those days to his mother, or his aunt, or whatever she is, that will open her eye as wide as a gate. I'll tickle his catastrophe, believe you me.
He cried above the clatter of the wheels.
I won't have her bastard of a nephew ruin my son. A counter-jumper's son, selling tapes in my cousin Peter Paul McSwaney's? Not likely.
He ceased. Mr. Bloom glanced from his angry moustache to Mr. Power's mild face and Martin Cunningham's eyes and beard, gravely shaking.
Noisy, self-willed man. Full of his son. He is right. Something to hand on. If little Rudy had lived, see him grow up. Hear his voice in the house. Walking beside Molly in an Eton suit. My son. Me in his eyes. Strange feeling it would be. From me. Just a chance. Must have been that morning in Raymond Terrace. She was at the window, watching the two dogs at it by the wall of the Cease to Do Evil. And the sergeant grinning up. She had that cream gown on, with the rib she never stitched. Give us a touch, Poldy. God, I'm dying for it. How life begins. Got big then. Had to refuse the Greystones concert. My son inside her. I could have helped him on in life. I could. Make him independent. Learn German, too.
Are we late? Mr. Power asked.
10 minutes, Martin Cunningham said, looking at his watch. Molly. Millie. Same thing, watered down. Her tomboy oaths. Oh, jumping Jupiter. Ye gods and little fishes. Still, she's a dear girl. Soon be a woman. Mullingar. Dearest Papley. Young student. Yes, yes. A woman too. Life. Life.
The carriage heeled over and back, their four trunks swaying.
Corny might have given us a more commodious yoke, Mr. Power said. He might, Mr. Dedalus said, if he hadn't that squint troubling him. Do you follow me?
He closed his left eye. Martin Cunningham began to brush away crust crumbs from under his thighs.
What is this? He said. In the name of God, crumbs!
Someone seems to have been making a picnic party here lately, Mr. Power said. all raised their thighs and eyed with disfavour the mildewed, buttonless leather of the seats. Mr. Dedalus, twisting his nose, frowned downward and said,
"Unless I'm greatly mistaken. What do you think, Martin?"
"It struck me too," Martin Cunningham said.
Mr. Bloom set his thigh down.
"Glad I took that bath. Feel my feet quite clean. But I wish Mrs. Fleming had darned these socks better."
Mr. Dedalus sighed resignedly.
"After all," he said, "it's the most natural thing in the world."
"Did Tom Kernan turn up?"
Martin Cunningham asked, twirling the peak of his beard gently.
"Yes," Mr. Bloom answered. "He's behind with Ned Lambert and Hines."
"And Corny Kelleher himself?" Mr. Power asked.
"At the cemetery," Martin Cunningham said.
"I met McCoy this morning," Mr. Bloom said. "He said he'd try to come."
The carriage halted short.
"What's wrong? We're stopped. Where are we?"
Mr. Bloom put his head out of the window.
"The Grand Canal," he said.
"Gasworks. Whooping cough, they say it cures. Good job Millie never got it. Poor children. Doubles them up black and blue in convulsions. Shame, really. Got off lightly with illnesses compared. Only measles. Flaxseed tea, scarlatina, influenza epidemics. Canvassing for death. Don't miss this chance. Dog's home over there. Poor old Athos. Be good to Athos, Leopold, is my last wish. Thy will be done. We obey them in the grave. A dying scrawl. He took it to heart, pined away. Quiet brute. Old men's dogs usually are."
A raindrop spat on his hat. He drew back and saw an instant of shower spray dots over the grey flags.
"Apart. Curious. Like through a colander." "I thought it would. My boots were creaking, I remember now."
"The weather is changing," he said quietly.
"A pity it did not keep up fine," Martin Cunningham said.
"Wanted for the country," Mr. Power said. "There's the sun again coming out." Mr. Dedalus, peering through his glasses towards the veiled sun, hurled a mute curse at the sky.
"It's as uncertain as a child's bottom," he said.
"We're off again."
The carriage turned again its stiff wheels, and their trunks swayed gently. Martin Cunningham twirled more quickly the peak of his beard.
"Tom Kernan was immense last night," he said, "and Paddy Leddard taking him off to his face."
"Oh, draw him out, Martin," Mr. Power said eagerly.
"Wait till you hear him, Simon, on Ben Dollard's singing of the Croppy Boy."
"Immense," Martin Cunningham said pompously. "His singing of that simple ballad, Martin, is the most trenchant rendering I ever heard in the whole course of my experience."
"Trenchant," Mr. Power said, laughing. "He's dead nuts on that. And the retrospective arrangement."
"Did you read Dan Dawson's speech?" Martin Cunningham asked.
"I did not then," Mr. Dedalus said. "Where is it?"
"In the paper this morning."
Mr. Bloom took the paper from his inside pocket.
"That book I must change for her."
"No, no," Mr. Dedalus said quickly. "Later on, please."
Mr. Bloom's glance travelled down the edge of the paper, scanning the deaths.
Callan, Coleman, Dignam, Fawcett, Lowry,
Norman Peak. What peak is that? Is it the chap who's in Crosby and Elaine's? No. Sexton Urbright. Inked characters fast fading on the frayed breaking paper. Thanks to the little flower, sadly missed, to the inexpressible grief of his aged 88 after a long and tedious illness. Month's mine, Quinlan, on whose soul sweet Jesus have mercy. It is now a month since dear Henry fled to his home of above in the sky, while his family weeps and mourns his loss, hoping some day to meet him on high. I tore up the envelope. Yes, where did I put her letter after I read it in the bath? He patted his waistcoat pocket. There, all right. Dear Henry fled. Before my patience are exhausted. National School, Meade Yard, the hazard. Only two there now, nodding. Full as a tick. Too much bone in their skulls. The other trotting round with a fare. An hour ago I was passing there. The Jarvies raised their hats. A pointsman's back straightened itself upright suddenly against a tramway standard by Mr. Bloom's window. Couldn't they invent something automatic so that the wheel itself much handier? Well, but that fellow would lose his job then. Well, but then another fellow would get a job making the new invention. Ancient concert rooms. Nothing on there. A man in a buff suit with a crepe armlet. Not much grief there. Quarter mourning. People in law, perhaps. They went past the bleak pulpit of St. Mark's, under the railway bridge, past the Queen's Theatre, in silence. Hoardings. Eugene Stratton. Mrs. Banman Palmer. Could I go to see Leah tonight, I wonder? I said I, or the Lily of Killarney. Elster Grimes Opera Company. Big, powerful change. Wet, bright bills for next week. Fun on the Bristol. Martin Cunningham could work a pass for the Gaiety. Have to stand a drink or two. As broad as it's long. He's coming in the afternoon. Her songs. Plastos. Sir Philip Crampton's memorial fountain bust. Who was he?
How do you do? Martin Cunningham said, raising his palm to his brow in salute.
He doesn't see us, Mr. Power said. Yes, he does. How do you do?
Who? Mr. Dedalus asked.
Blazes Boylan, Mr. Power said. There he is, airing his quiff.
Just that moment I was thinking.
Mr. Dedalus bent across to salute. From the door of the Red Bank, the white disc of a straw hat flashed reply. Spruce figure. Passed. Mr. Bloom reviewed the nails of his left hand, then those of his right hand.
The nails, yes.
Is there anything more in him that they, she, sees?
Fascination. Worst man in Dublin. That keeps him alive. They sometimes feel what a person is. Instinct.
But a type like that. My nails. I am just looking at them, well paired. And after, thinking alone. Body getting a bit softy. I would notice that, from remembering. What causes that? I suppose the skin can't contract quickly enough when the flesh falls off. But the shape is there. The shape is there still. Shoulders, hips, plump. Night of the dance, dressing. Shift stuck between the cheeks behind. He clasped his hands between his knees and, satisfied, sent his vacant glance over their faces. Mr. Power asked, "How is the concert tour getting on, Bloom?"
"Oh, very well," Mr. Bloom said. "I hear great accounts of it. It's a good idea. You see, are you going yourself?" "Well, no," Mr. Bloom said. "In point of fact, I have to go down to the County Clare on some private business. You see, the idea is to tour the chief towns. What you lose on one, you can make up on the other." "Quite so," Martin Cunningham said. "Mary Anderson is up there now. Have you good artists?" "Louis Werner is touring her," Mr. Bloom said. "Oh, yes, we'll have all top nobbers. J.C. Doyle and John McCormack, I hope, and the best, in fact." "And Madame?" Mr. Power said, smiling. "Last but not least." Mr. Bloom unclasped his hands in a gesture of soft politeness and clasped them. "Smith O'Brien. Someone has laid a bunch of flowers there. Woman. Must be his death day. For many happy returns." The carriage, wheeling by Farrell's statue, united noiselessly their unresisting knees. "Oot!" A dull-garbed old man from the curbstone tendered his wares, his mouth opening. "Oot!
Four bootlaces for a penny."
Wonder why he was struck off the rolls. Had his office in Hume Street. Same house as Molly's namesake, Tweedy. Crown solicitor for Waterford. Has that silk hat ever since. Relics of old decency. Mourning, too. Terrible come down. Poor wretch. Kicked about like snuff at a wake. O'Callaghan on his last legs. And Madame. 11:20. Up. Mrs. Fleming is in to clean. Doing her hair. Humming. Voglio e non vorrei. No. Vorrei e non. Looking at the tips of her hairs to see if they're split. Mi trema un poco il. Beautiful on that tray, her voice is. Weeping tone. A thrush, a throstle. There is a word, throstle, that expresses that. His eyes pass lightly over Mr. Power's good-looking face. Greyish over the ears. Madame. Smiling. I smile back. A smile goes a long way. Only politeness, perhaps. Nice fellow. Who knows, is that true about the woman he keeps? Not pleasant for the wife. Yet they say, who was it told me, there is no carnal. You would imagine that would get played out pretty quick.
Yes, it was Crofton met him one evening, bringing her a pound of rump steak. What is this she was? Barmaid in Jewry's? Or the Moira, was it?
They passed under the huge cloaked Liberator's form.
Martin Cunningham nudged Mr. Power. "Of the tribe of Reuben," he said.
A tall, black-bearded figure, bent on a stick, stumping round the corner of Elvery's Elephant House, showed them a curved hand open on his spine.
"In all his pristine beauty," Mr. Power said.
Mr. Dedalus looked after the stumping figure and said mildly,
"The devil break the hasp of your back."
Mr. Power, collapsing in laughter, shaded his face from the window as the carriage passed Gray's statue.
"We have all been there," Martin Cunningham said broadly.
His eyes met Mr. Bloom's eyes. He caressed his beard, adding,
"Well, nearly all of us."
Mr. Bloom began to speak with sudden eagerness to his companions' faces.
"That's an awfully good one that's going the rounds about Reuben J. and the son."
"About the boatman?" Mr. Power asked.
"Yes, isn't it awfully good?"
"What is that?"
Mr. Dedalus asked. "I didn't hear it."
"There was a girl in the case," Mr. Bloom began, "and he determined to send him to the Isle of Man, out of harm's way. But when they were both..."
"What?" Mr. Dedalus asked. "That confirmed bloody Hobbledehoy, is it?"
"Yes," Mr. Bloom said.
"They were both on the way to the boat, and he tried to drown..."
"Drown Barabbas!"
Mr. Dedalus cried.
"I wish to Christ he did."
Mr. Power sent a long laugh down his shaded nostrils.
"No," Mr. Bloom said, "the son himself."
Martin Cunningham thwarted his speech rudely.
"Reuben J. and the son were piking it down the quay next the river on their way to the Isle of Man boat, and the young chiseller suddenly got loose and over the wall with him into the Liffey."
"For God's sake," Mr. Dedalus exclaimed in fright. "Is he dead?"
"Dead," Martin Cunningham cried. "Not he. A boatman got a pole and fished him out by the slack of the breeches, and he was landed up to the father on the quay, more dead than alive. Half the town was there."
"Yes," Mr. Bloom said, "but the funny part is..."
"And Reuben J.," Martin Cunningham said, "gave the boatman a florin for saving his son's life."
A stifled sigh came from under Mr. Power's hand.
"Oh, he did," Martin Cunningham affirmed. "Like a hero. A silver florin."
"Isn't it awfully good?"
Mr. Bloom said eagerly.
1 and 8 pence too much," Mr. Dedalus said dryly.
Mr. Power's choked laugh burst quietly in the carriage.
Nelson's Pillar.
8 plums a penny. 8 for a penny.
"We had better look a little serious," Martin Cunningham said.
Mr. Dedalus sighed.
"Ah, then indeed," he said. "Poor little Paddy wouldn't grudge us a laugh. Many a good one," he told himself.
"The Lord forgive me,"
Mr. Power said, wiping his wet eyes with his fingers.
"Poor Paddy! I little thought a week ago, when I saw him last, and he was in his usual health, that I'd be driving after him like this.
He's gone from us." "As decent a little man as ever wore a hat," Mr. Dedalus said. "He went very suddenly."
"Breakdown," Martin Cunningham said. "Heart."
He tapped his chest sadly.
"Blazing face. Red hot. Too much John Barleycorn. Cure for a red nose. Drink like the devil till it turns adelaide. A lot of money he spent colouring it."
Mr. Power gazed at the passing houses with rueful apprehension. "He had a sudden death, poor fellow," he said. "The best death," Mr. Bloom said. Their wide open eyes looked at him. "No suffering," he said. "A moment and all is over. Like dying in sleep." No one spoke. Dead side of the street, this. Dull business by day. Land agents, temperance hotel, falconer's railway guide, civil service college, Gill's Catholic club, the industrious blind. Why? Some reason. Sun or wind. At night, too. Chummies and slavies. Under the patronage of the late Father Matthew. Foundation stone for Parnell. Breakdown. Heart. White horses with white frontlet plumes came round the rotunda corner, galloping. A tiny coffin flashed by. In a hurry to bury. A mourning coach. Unmarried. Black for the married. Piebald for bachelors. Done for a nun. Sad, Martin Cunningham said. A child. A dwarf's face, mauve and wrinkled, like little Rudy's was. Dwarf's body, weak as putty, in a white-lined deal box. Burial. Friendly society pays. Penny a week for a sod of turf. Our little beggar, baby. Meant nothing. Mistake of nature. If it's healthy, it's from the mother. If not, from the man. Better luck next time. Poor little thing, Mr. Dedalus said. It's well out of it. The carriage climbed more slowly the hill of Rutland Square. Rattle his bones over the stones, only a pauper nobody owns. In the midst of life, Martin Cunningham said. But the worst of all, Mr. Power said, is the man who takes his own life. Martin Cunningham drew out his watch briskly, coughed, and put it back. The greatest disgrace to have in the family, Mr. Power added. Temporary insanity, of course, Martin Cunningham said decisively. We must take a charitable view of it. They say a man who does it is a coward, Mr. Dedalus said. It is not for us to judge, Martin Cunningham said. Mr. Bloom, about to speak, closed his lips again. Martin Cunningham's large eyes, looking away now, sympathetic human man he is, intelligent, like Shakespeare's face, always a good word to say. They have no mercy on that here, or infanticide. Refuse Christian burial. They used to drive a stake of wood through his heart in the grave, as if it wasn't broken already. Yet sometimes they repent too late, found in the riverbed, clutching rushes. He looked at me, and that awful drunkard of a wife of his, setting up house for her time after time, and then pawning the furniture on him every Saturday almost, leading him the life of the damned. Wear the heart out of a stone, that. Monday morning, start afresh, shoulder to the wheel. Lord, she must have looked a sight that night, Dedalus told me he was in there, drunk about the place and capering with Martin's umbrella. And they call me the Jewel of Asia,
Ovation, vergation.
He looked away from me. He knows. Rattle his bones. That afternoon of the inquest, the red-labelled bottle on the table, the room in the hotel with hunting pictures. Stuffy it was. Sunlight through the slats of the Venetian blind. The coroner's sunlit ears, big and hairy. Boots giving evidence. Thought he was asleep first, then saw like yellow streaks on his face. Had slipped down to the foot of the bed. Verdict. Overdose. Death by misadventure. The letter. For my son, Leopold. No more pain. Wake no more. Nobody owns. The carriage rattles swiftly along Blessington Street, over the stones.
We are going the pace, I think, Martin Cunningham said.
God grant he doesn't upset us on the road, Mr. Power said.
I hope not, Martin Cunningham said. That will be a great race tomorrow in Germany, the Gordon Bennett.
Yes, by Jove, Mr. Dedalus said. That will be worth seeing, faith.
As they turned into Berkeley Street, a street organ near the basin sent over and after them a rollicking, rattling song of the halls.
Has anybody here seen Kelly? K-E-L-L-Y. Dead march from Saul.
He's as bad as old Antonio. He left me on my own, Neo.
Pirouette. The Mater Misericordiae.
Eccles Street. My house down there. Big place. Ward for incurables there. Very encouraging. Our Lady's Hospice for the Dying. Deadhouse handy underneath. Where old Mrs. Reardon died. They look terrible, the women. Her feeding cup and rubbing her mouth with the spoon. Then the screen round her bed for her to die. Nice young student that was. Dressed that bite the bee gave me. He's gone over to the lying-in hospital, they told me. From one extreme to the other.
The carriage galloped round a corner, stopped. What's wrong now? A divided drove of branded cattle passed the windows, lowing, slouching by on padded hoofs, whisking their tails slowly on their cluttered, bony croups. Outside them, and through them, ran raddled sheep, bleating their fear.
Emigrants, Mr. Power said.
Hoo, hoo, hoo,
the drover's voice cried, his switch sounding on their flanks.
Hoo, out of that.
Thursday, of course. Tomorrow is killing day. Springers. Cuff sold them about 27 quid each. For Liverpool, probably. Roast beef for old England. They buy up all the juicy ones. And then the fifth quarter lost. All that raw stuff, hide, hair, horns, comes to a big thing in a year. Dead meat trade. Byproducts of the slaughterhouses for tanneries. Soap, margarine. Wonder if that dodge works now. Getting Dickie Mead off the train at Clonsilla.
The carriage moved on through the drove.
I can't make out why the corporation doesn't run a tram line from the park gate to the quays, Mr. Bloom said. All those animals could be taken in trucks down to the boats.
Instead of blocking up the thoroughfare, Martin Cunningham said.
Quite right, they ought to.
Yes, Mr. Bloom said.
And another thing, I often thought, is to have municipal funeral trams like they have in Milan, you know. Run the line out to the cemetery gates and have special trams, hearse and carriage and all. Don't you see what I mean?
Oh, that be damned for a story, Mr. Dedalus said. Pullman car and saloon dining room. A poor lookout for Corny, Mr. Power added.
Why? Mr. Bloom asked, turning to Mr. Dedalus. Wouldn't it be more decent than galloping two abreast?
Well, there's something in that, Mr. Dedalus granted. And, Martin Cunningham said, we wouldn't have scenes like that when the hearse capsized round Dunphy's and upset the coffin onto the road.
That was terrible, Mr. Power's shocked face said. And the corpse fell about the road. Terrible.
First round Dunphy's, Mr. Dedalus said, nodding. Gordon Bennett Cup. Praise be to God, Martin Cunningham said piously.
Bum, upset. A coffin bumped out onto the road, burst open. Paddy Dignam shot out and rolling over stiff in the dust in a brown habit too large for him. Red face, grey now, mouth fallen open, asking, what's up now? Quite right to close it. Looks horrid open. Then the insides decompose quickly. Much better to close up all the orifices. Yes, also, with wax. The sphincter loose. Seal up all.
Dunphy's, Mr. Power announced as the carriage turned right.
Dunphy's Corner. Mourning coaches drawn up, drowning their grief. A pause by the wayside. Tip-top position for a pub. Expect we'll pull up here on the way back to drink his health. Pass round the consolation. Elixir of life. But suppose now it did happen. Would he bleed if a nail, say, cut him in the knocking about? He would and he wouldn't, I suppose. Depends on where. The circulation stops. Still, some might ooze out of an artery. It would be better to bury them in red. A dark red.
In silence, they drove along Phibsborough Road. An empty hearse trotted by, coming from the cemetery.
Looks relieved. Crossguns Bridge. The Royal Canal.
Water rushed roaring through the sluices. A man stood on his dropping barge between clamps of turf. On the towpath by the lock, a slack-tethered horse.
Aboard of the Bugaboo.
Their eyes watched him.
On the slow, weedy waterway, he had floated on his raft coastward over Ireland. Drawn by a haulage rope, past beds of reeds, over slime, mud-choked bottles, carrion dogs. Athlone, Mullingar, Moy Valley. I could make a walking tour to see Millie by the canal. Or cycle down. Hire some old croc, safety.
Wren had won the other day at the auction, but a lady's.
Developing waterways. James McCann's hobby to row me o'er the ferry. Cheaper transit, by easy stages. Houseboats, camping out. Also hearses. To heaven by water. Perhaps I will, without writing. Come as a surprise. Leekslip, Clonsilla. Dropping down lock by lock to Dublin.
with turf from the Midland bogs. Salute. He lifted his brown straw hat, saluting Paddy Dignam. They drove on past Brian Boru House. Near it now. I wonder how is our friend Fogarty getting on, Mr. Power said.
Better ask Tom Kernan, Mr. Dedalus said. How is that? Martin Cunningham said. Left him weeping, I suppose.
Though lost to sight, Mr. Dedalus said, to memory dear. The carriage steered left for Finglas Road.
The stonecutter's yard on the right. Last lap.
Crowded on the spit of land, silent shapes appeared. White, sorrowful, holding out calm hands, knelt in grief, pointing. Fragments of shapes, hewn, in white silence, appealing.
The best obtainable. Thomas H. Denany, monumental builder and sculptor. Past.
On the curbstone, before Jimmy Geary the sexton's, an old tramp sat, grumbling, emptying the dirt and stones out of his huge, dust-brown, yawning boot.
After life's journey.
Gloomy gardens then went by, one by one. Gloomy houses. Mr. Power pointed. That is where Childs was murdered, he said. The last house.
So it is, Mr. Dedalus said. A gruesome case. Seymour Bush got him off. Murdered his brother, or so they said.
The Crown had no evidence, Mr. Power said.
Only circumstantial, Martin Cunningham added. That's the maxim of the law. Better for 99 guilty to escape than for one innocent person to be wrongfully condemned.
They looked. Murderer's ground. It passed darkly, shuttered, tenantless, unweeded garden.
Whole place gone to hell. Wrongfully condemned. Murder. The murderer's image in the eye of the murdered. They love reading about it. Man's head found in a garden. Her clothing consisted of. How she met her death. Recent outrage. The weapon used. Murderer is still at large. Clues. A shoelace. The body to be exhumed. Murder will out. Cramped in this carriage. She mightn't like me to come that way without letting her know. Must be careful about women. Catch them once with their pants down. Never forgive you after. 15.
The high railings of Prospect ripple past their gaze. Dark poplars, rare white forms. Forms more frequent, white shapes thronged amid the trees. White forms and fragments streaming by mutely, sustaining vain gestures on the air. The felly harshed against the curbstone, stopped. Martin Cunningham put out his arm and, wrenching back the handle, shoved the door open with his knee. He stepped out. Mr. Power and Mr. Dedalus followed.
Change that soap now.
Mr. Bloom's hand unbuttoned his hip pocket swiftly and transferred the paper-stuck soap to his inner handkerchief pocket. He stepped out of the carriage, replacing the newspaper his other hand still held.
Paltry funeral. Coach and three carriages. It's all the same. Pallbearers, gold reins, requiem mass, firing a volley. Pomp of death.
Beyond the hind carriage, a hawker stood by his barrow of cakes and fruit.
Simnel cakes, those are. Stuck together. Cakes for the dead. Dog biscuits. Who ate them? Mourners coming out.